Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And today, we're going to review two books, but we're going to separate them out into different episodes.
Okay.
Well, at least, let me put it this way. I'm recovering from a cold. Juliana's also recovering from a cold or something like that. So let's see if we got the energy to do both reviews today. Either way, these books are linked in a way which I did not know going in.
Okay.
So the two books that I'm going to talk about. First, I'm going to talk about The Road by Cormac McCarthy. Is that it? Yeah, Cormac McCarthy. It's a book from 2006.
Okay.
Very influential, maybe not influential, very popular at the time, made into a movie, won the Pulitzer Prize, which is the American Writing Fiction Prize. And And the other one is called The Bear, which was published in 2020, which we'll talk about more of that in the next episode. But just so you know, I started reading these at kind of the same time.
Okay.
Well, not kind of the same time. I was reading various different books, as I was saying. I'm trying to get through various big books and things. And
you were looking out for
The Road
something.
Has just been in my Audible library. I think it was one of the free books or something that they have there.
Okay.
So I've been kind of like sampling it and trying to get into it. And I was like, no, I want to change from The Road. And then I read The Bear. And if anyone's read both of those, they know that they are not the same book, but very closely linked. I went into it like not knowing what The Bear was and not really knowing much about it.
But you did know what you were getting into with reading The Road. You
yes.
knew The
so
Road.
Let's not mention The Bear until okay. next episode, because okay. The Road is the more famous book, the more popular book, the one that's got made into a movie.
I've never heard of this.
The Road. Okay, yes. So back in the day, someone decided, hey, I'm going to write a book which is really depressing. And it's about a man and a boy going down a road.
Okay.
And I've always known about this book because it's one of those times when like a literary author goes, oh, I'm going to try, you know, some kind of genre fiction. So they'll do a dip into, you know, science fiction or fantasy. And this is post-apocalyptic fiction.
Okay.
And so I always knew about it. Lots of people have recommended it, but it's always come with, oh, it's a bit depressing, but, you know, let's go for it. You know, like,
okay.
Oh, like you check it out or something. So I thought, like, oh, even if it's a bit depressing, let's just check it out. It's not that long. As an audiobook. Actually, let me just look it up here. Let me just go to... Oh, no. That's not what I wanted to do. I click something and I didn't have it here. So let's click on Audible and maybe I can find it here. See how long it is. The Road is... Yes, 6 hours, 39 minutes. So not a big book.
Yeah.
Not a big book. So I was like, well, let's just give it a go. And I went into it. And it is as...
depressing as you thought?
No, actually, here's the thing. It's not depressing.
Okay.
Because, and this is, I'm just going to come right out and say it. This is such a shit book that it didn't make me feel anything except boredom. And it made me feel depressed at how bad something can be written and how boring it can be and how unoriginal the post-apocalyptic can be and how all of the shortcuts at every moment where something could be made interesting is just skipped. So someone has somebody has perfectly crafted a book to be shit, but also he's a famous literary author. So like the shitness that like what you're thinking, how bad the writing is and how unoriginal the story is. You just go, oh yeah, but it's really bleak. It makes you feel like you're existing in a post-apocalyptic world. I'm like, no, it makes me feel like I'm reading a shit book. Like,
okay.
It's not a very good book. It's not well written. The story is boring. The dialogue is boring. The characters are literally don't have names. Like, you don't know anything about them. You don't know anything about the world. And it's like the opposite of everything that I want from a post-apocalyptic book.
Okay.
And as someone who reads science fiction, it's like it's the worst. It's like one of the worst examples of science fiction. It's one of the worst examples of post-apocalyptic fiction. And it's also just kind of like full of really dull writing, dull scenes, dull dialogue, dull characters. And that doesn't make me feel depressed about the contents of the book. Mm. It just makes me feel depressed that I'm having or like people read this.
Okay. One more question about the general idea that I get here.
Yeah.
Like, how I understand from not knowing anything about it and you not liking it. You said it's literary dystopia.
Well, okay. Is it somebody who's known as a literary author, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. That wasn't my point yet. Okay. You interrupted me here.
Sorry.
So that does not always overlap with, at the same time, being science fiction. What is science fiction-y about this book, then?
Okay, well, to be really broad about it, not this. That's the thing.
What do you mean, not this?
Science fiction has to change something in the world so people act differently in the world, and then you can examine humanity and life and society and storytelling and technology. You know, like, you're changing something from what we live in right now,
yeah,
to see how people act differently and see how society acts differently. That's, yes, kind of like the most common version of science fiction, like the, yes, most common definition of that, yes, of science fiction.
But this is only dystopian. Like, it takes our world...
No, it's not dystopian, because dystopian is sort of like 1984, where it's sort of like the rules have changed, so the world acts differently because someone has decided that something's differently. Like, there's, you know, like, there's everyone's being surveilled, or everything is under control, or children are taught to kill each other and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And this isn't that.
So what is it?
It's nothing. It's not anything. There isn't any idea here which makes it science fiction.
Okay, so it's set in our world, and two people walk down a road.
It might as well not be set in our world, because there's no connection between the world that's in this book and our world now, except that we're told it's America, but are they American? It doesn't matter. Like, and there's been some kind of thing that's killed off all life except for human life. You know, plant life is dying, animal life is all dead, but humans have survived somewhere. So you're like, well, it's not just a nuclear strike. But again, not ever examined. It's sort of like, oh yeah, and then everyone died. Like, there's a little bit of a flashback to, like, the boy's mother dying or something.
Okay.
And you're like, oh well, she died. And you're like, but why did she? And why is there nothing to eat? Like, why can't? And it's just. But it's not interested,
like,
in that.
If plants and animals are dead, yeah, humans can't survive.
Exactly. So all you have is more and more people. But again, it's the I got 50% or more, over 50% of the way through this book, probably about ish. 50% of the way through this book. And it never decided to examine what happened. Now, I don't mind that if that's what the book is about. If the book is about, all right, well, we don't actually care how the world ended. We don't care how everyone died.
But, like, we have current problems.
Yeah,
to
we
solve.
Have current problems to solve. So let's solve those problems now, you know.
Yeah.
And you can, and the fun parts of this post-apocalyptic is that of, like, going, oh, so it was a nuclear strike. You know, so there's some legend from back in the day. Oh, it might have been this. Oh, it was a disease. It was a zombie apocalypse. It could have been, like, any of the things that it could have been to lead there.
Yeah.
This book is not interested in those. And unfortunately, the characters in the book don't care, don't seem to care, have no interest in that,
okay,
which makes it really difficult for me to care about the situation that they're in, because then they act as though it's brand new to them, even though it's been like 6 years since the apocalypse, and now this is post-apocalypse.
Oh, okay, so we know that it's 6 years ago since something dramatically happened.
And now there's a few people left on Earth, and a man and a boy are walking down a road, pulling a trolley down a road, trying to get somewhere south, because it's going to be warmer down there, and it's too cold where they are.
And so basically, if we know that there's a boy, the boy had been a baby when it happened.
Yeah, he was a baby when
happened. So the boy has no recollection of what happened.
Yeah, but
he's just growing up.
And
like,
here's
this.
One of the worst things about it is that the boy acts as though he's been brought up in suburbia and now everything's new. So all the time he's like, I'm scared. I'm like, but this is your life. Like, why are you suddenly scared now? Like, how have you learned to be scared about what's happening now? Like,
none of it made any sense. You don't know any different.
No, you don't know any different. And also, it's impossible for you to know any different, because, like, the things that you would need to know about... Like, would your father have told you everything that was good previously, and that's your expectations for the world? And then it's like, psych, I'm now going to walk down a road with you and encounter, you know, people who are starving and dead bodies and corpses and stuff like that. So what I'm trying to say is, the book's shit. Like, it's not good. And I put in my review that if I'm going to read escapist books, escapist stories, I would at least want them to be happy escapist stories, like, where
that
sort of fun
is not escapist.
Well, and here's the thing, I wrote that at the time kind of in like a huff about how much, like, suddenly cannibals turned up and I'm like, really cannibals, now we're doing cannibal. It's like so obvious, it's sort of like straight down the line what happens with post-apocalypse. You're like, and I was getting to the point where I was like, oh, this is going to be the cannibal scene, and I was like, and then it came along and I was like, oh, it is the cannibalism scene.
Well, that is kind of like the only thing that can happen, because if animals are dead and plants are dead, yeah, there's nothing else you
can... Okay, we've got to stop thinking about why stuff's happening in this book, because that's not what it's about. But what I say is escapism, and I made some notes here. I'll go through some of the other notes, but that's what I said. I said, I don't need escapism fiction to be this bleak.
Yeah.
Something being escapism doesn't mean that it's just happy and makes you feel good.
Okay.
And I didn't really think about this, but like, what's the definition, like my definition of escapist movie or escapist literature is that it requires not thinking and not having to address any concerns that you have now.
Yes.
Like escapism means that, something political is happening. Don't worry about the politics. Just watch this thing. Mm. And you're like, great, good versus evil. And you're just like, you don't have to associate them with anything, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you go, what about this kind of thing? Like, oh, don't worry about that. Just enjoy this. Like, but the world building doesn't make sense. Don't worry about it. Just go with it.
We actually recently talked about this. It's like some of the TV shows I'm watching.
Yeah.
For me, some of that is this kind of escapism in other people's lives under other people's problems and other people's careers and whatever.
Yeah.
And so that I then don't have to constantly sit and reflect on my own stuff going on. So that, I understand what you mean with that kind of escapism. Yeah,
so what I'm talking about escapism is like, as you're, I say, thinking about a book or a movie or a TV show, as you're reading it or watching it or listening to it or whatever, once you as you're experiencing it, you don't have to think about it too hard. And more to the point is, when you stop reading it or watching it or listening to it, you don't have to think about it more.
Yeah.
Or put it this way, it doesn't reward thinking about it more, or it doesn't require thinking about it more.
Yes.
You know, I'll watch a fun movie or a fun TV show, and you get to the end of it, and you're like, great, I never have to think about that thing again. And that, for me, is a good, fun movie.
Yes.
But like, when I watch a Mission Impossible movie, I get to the end, and I'm like, oh, but what does it mean? And it made me think about this, and it made me think about politics. I'm like, no, Tom Cruise jumped out of an airplane, and you're like, great.
Yeah. And so, two hours of your life... You have escaped from your life for two hours, and that's the goal.
You can get a Top Gun, and you're like, great. You know, this Top Gun thing, like, didn't have to think about anything. Like, you can go ponder, but what does it mean about American militaristic imperialism?
Yeah, you can do that with everything.
No, you don't need to worry about that, because at the end, just don't even think about it. Like, you don't even need to worry about it. Mm. It doesn't make you confront your mortality. Doesn't make you rethink your politics. It doesn't I mean, I'm not saying politics is a main thing. I'm just saying this is a book set in America, post-apocalyptic America, which references nothing about this book. Like, I'm not saying that a book has to be political, but I'm saying this is a book which is anti-political. It's anti-everything. Not anti-everything. It is devoid of everything.
Okay.
Because it's post-apocalyptic, everything that could be interesting about the world has been stripped out.
Yeah.
For two nameless, boring characters. And it's too easy. And this is what my thing was like here as well. It's like utterly unimaginative post-apocalyptic fiction, which is easy to do. It's easy to make people feel dangerous when you're like, oh, why is it dangerous? Because there's no laws anymore and anyone can kill you for any reason. And you're like, okay, that's easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why does this feel dangerous? Well, we've got a child here and the child is like five or six years old and the child is afraid. So are you afraid? Yes, I'm afraid. The child is in danger. And you're like, yeah, the child is in danger, which it's like easy mode storytelling, easy mode everything.
Yes, you have convenient rules and circumstances that create that you like. The author came up with these circumstances and... so that by coming up with those circumstances, the thing was created.
Yeah, like, and here's the thing.
Rule.
It's zero effort, zero work.
Okay.
To write something where there is no hope and everything is grey and everything is bleak, all you have to do is sustain my interest through the bleakness and the darkness and the cold and the hopelessness.
Yeah.
And he utterly failed to do that to the point where I was like, fuck it. Like, you get to the point where people are going to eat each other. Like, there's going to be a cannibalism scene or they're going to run from the cannibals. I'm like, all right, just don't even need to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, this book is a nothing book. If you know what I mean? There is literally nothing in. And it's not just there's a nothing book with nothing to think about on like escapism, but it failed at the thing that everybody said it would make me feel, which is like sad and depressed. It was failing at that. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it was bad, unenjoyable, but not an enjoyable sort of like, oh, like I'm worrying about these characters. Because I know the dad's going to die at the end. There's no way the dad is... There's no way you're going to get to the end of the book and the dad is going to survive.
Okay.
Of course not. Dad dies at the end. Of course. Like, it's so easy. Or the child dies at the end and it's even worse. You know, but like, okay. At the time I was like, well, all I need to do is skip forward to the last chapter and read how the dad dies.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Did you do that?
No, of course not. It's not worth it. So anyway, after all of this, I say all of this, we've only been recording a few minutes, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
I've got across my all of my initial reactions.
Okay.
I had some others, but what I thought I'd do is I thought, oh, I can't be the only one who thinks this is a one-star book. Surely this isn't a one-star book.
Are you?
No. So I went over and I found some other people on Goodreads, and I enjoyed myself so much reading other people's one-star reviews. I did actually read some five-star reviews, but everything that they were getting out of the book, I didn't understand. Like, I was like, didn't we read the same book? Like, the writing was really overburdened and shit and repetitive and the characters didn't have any characterization.
Right.
But they're like, oh yeah, and it made me think and it makes me reassess my relationship with my child. And I'm like, how?
What?
Like, there's nothing in this book about relationships between fathers and children. And anyway, apparently then there was, because Cormac McCarthy said, oh, it was about, like, you know, I feel like a bit distant from my son. And I'm like, I didn't get any of that out of this book. It's just garbage. Anyway.
Okay.
So,
Right.
So I went through and read a few bits and pieces. Some reviews here. One by J.G. Keeley. Oh, no. And I didn't make any notes about this. Maybe if I go, no. Oh, no, I shouldn't do this because now I'm... Okay. Well, sorry, I didn't make the note about this. Which one is it here? Let me just click on it here. J.G. Keeley. Oh, yeah, so he was talking about this. The road is unsteady and repetitive. Now Aping Melville, now Hemingway, and bits and pieces like that. So...
Taking it from a literary point
of view. Yeah, and you're saying, have you heard of the Sokal Affair? Do you know the Sokal Affair, where somebody wrote an academic paper to go in a postmodern journal, and it was like written by a computer algorithm and didn't actually have any, or like some of it was written by computer algorithm and stuff.
Okay.
And so the reviewers put it in, it was published anyway, so I'm like, no, I'm not an author like this. I was showing how shit, like how meaningless this kind of stuff is there. Anyway, don't need to go into that. But he mentions that and it's sort of like, that's what it felt like reading this.
Yes.
Like someone written a novel, sort of like, how bad can I write a novel? But I'm a famous enough literary author already. Yeah. Can I put one over on everyone?
This reminds me a lot about what you can do with this postmodernist art style, is that you can take it and flip it around.
Yeah.
And it's being done in music a lot. You know, like you have like your John Cage's 4:33, and then you have other things that was like very serious, and people sit in the concert hall and very serious.
Everything
is like, oh, this is important and grave and whatever. And then in German television, there was a comedian who did do like some concert setting where he was standing very serious in front of the piano as the singer, and then he sang Hurts! and everything he took very serious, and the people in the audience were looking very, very grave and serious. But of course, and in the end, like they didn't get the twistedness of like the postmodernist postmodernism.
But this
comedy.
Isn't postmodern. This isn't postmodern. There isn't anything. Like I say, if it was this, it would be interesting. But it isn't. It's just shit. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you can keep saying that.
Okay.
There is no
enough people. Look,
grasp
this is a very highly rated book. The Road. Let me have it. 3.99.
Okay.
And let me just look at this stuff here. Like again. These are the people who've read it. So let me go through some friends on Goodreads. These are the people I'm talking to here. Carlex rated it 5 stars. Michael rated it 5 stars. Ryan rated it 5 stars. Lekashua, Jason, Seth, Oliver, James rated it 4 stars. And these are 4 stars now here. Oliver, James, Ryan rated it 4 stars. Like this book, of all of the reviews that I have here, it's like lots of high ratings.
Yes.
You know, and also high ratings from people who other reviews I respect because either they're SFBRP listeners or they're friends of mine on Goodreads and I see what they think about other books. I'm like, what did this... Again, it passes me by. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into the Sokal Affair and like postmodern.
I know, but
I'm just saying that it felt
some
like
some sort of example. What makes it... Like,
okay.
What, you know...
Let's go on to a review by Evan here. And Evan wrote the book, wrote his review in the style of what it's like to read this book.
Okay.
So this is the kind of thing. Now, this is someone taking the piss out of the book. He opened the book and read. He began to see a pattern, a monotonous pattern of hopelessness. Chunks of grey hopelessness. Prose set in concrete, grey. Grey blocks of prose, he read. He recognised images from films long past and books from authors of yore, many science fiction writers, many movie makers. He thought he saw a flash, something familiar. Perhaps it was one of perhaps it was only one of his nagging dreams, a dream of what once existed, but he did not know. And here, a fragment, The Last Man on Earth, The Omega Man, Dawn of the Dead, Planet of the Apes, The Day After, The Twilight Zone, yes, that one, the one about the man and the books, and the broken glasses, cannibals, people in rags, charred bodies, emptiness, greyness, On the Beach popped into his mind, his grey, dulled mind, the Andromeda Strain, desiccated bodies, dusty, leathered, ashen bodies. My concoction is out of a tin can, he might have thought, but he did not. Tin food, pre-packaged, cans waiting to be plucked and plundered. He opened the literary beanie weenies and served them to the world, and the world ate, hungrily ate, and believed that beanie weenies on their empty stomachs tasted like the greatest gourmet dish they had ever tasted, for they knew not any better. Their grey matter just did not know, and they went down the road.
That was amazing.
So that's him reviewing the book. Like, I'm going, I'm like, yeah, like, all of the stuff here we've seen before, this is easy mode version of it. I that's just the notes that I copied out of that bit and piece. It's a longer review, and he gave it 2 stars.
Were you tearing up?
No, I'm not tearing up. I mean, it just takes effort to, like, read something like, that somberly. No, you might think he's taking the piss about how it actually reads.
No, I really get how that book is written now.
Yeah. And so here's actually some other people. This is a review from Robin, and she quotes something out the book, the opening lines of the book. Here's the opening lines of the book. When he woke in the woods, in the dark and the cold of the night, he'd reach out to touch the child sleeping beside him. Nights dark beyond darkness and days more grey than... and days more grey each one than what had gone before. No, it took me 2 attempts to read that. Let me just go for that second sentence again. Nights dark beyond darkness and the days more grey each one than what had gone before. Now, these are the opening lines of the book. So she said, I once presented these 2 sentences to an amateur writers' forum and asked their opinion. Several members politely replied that the sentences were badly in need of work. Not only were they not grammatically correct, but they were awkward, confusing, used several unnecessary words, and... had all the rhythm and pacing of a dog with 4 broken legs. Nights dark beyond darkness has got to rank up there with it was a dark and stormy night. This is not an isolated example. And that's the kind of thing I was...
Okay. That makes this literary. I understand.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make it literary. No, he literally says it was a dark and stormy night, but he did it by the night's dark beyond darkness.
I'm calling it literary as a term of... using language in the most confusing way.
No, it's not confusing because it's like interesting words that you go, what does that word mean? Like, oh, I've got to look that up. Or, you know, an interesting turn of phrase, which you go, oh, let me think about that again. Oh, yeah, it does mean something good. No, it just means it's kind of grey and dark out there. Like, it's dark at night and grey during the day. That's what it's saying. Yep. Like, if you're going to use literary language, what you need to do is make me think about the world in a way which I haven't before, which reveals something more interesting about the world, which you like. If you just use normal words, you would get a certain level of interestingness. And by using literary words and like using florid language or whatever, not florid, because that's the opposite of florid. Yeah. But so, okay. And so,
I get it. I have more of an impression of what you criticize here.
And this is why I didn't like, because I'm listening to an audiobook.
Yes.
So I'm just, you know, like listening to this and just going, what did that even mean? And, you know, you skip back 30 seconds, you're like, oh, it doesn't mean anything. Yeah, it just means he's cold.
If you
know
see
what I mean?
A sentence like that, what happens to me is that I then, what happened to you, I need to go back and read again, like trying to figure out where the, you know, where the emphasis in the sentence is. Because you, like, in the same way that you, there's more.
Let me get onto this. But just keep in mind. So This is, I think this is either more from Robin's review or from J.G. Keeley's, because this is some stuff that I like copied and pasted out.
Yeah.
Lest you think I'm selectively picking the worst, here is the passage Mr. Scheuss review, so, referencing someone else's review, as an example of genius writing. Here we go. This is what somebody uses as an example of genius writing.
Yeah.
Tottering in that cold, autistic dark with his arms out held for balance while the vestibular calculations in his skull cranked out their reckonings, an old chronicle, to seek out the upright, no fall, but preceded by a declination. He took great marching steps into the nothingness, counting them against his return. What Cormac McCarthy is describing here is that it is dark and the man can't see where he's going. The author is clear.
Sorry.
He says the author is clearly a master of communication. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. The cold autistic dark. You know, but what he's saying is it's dark and the guy can't see where he's going. But it can't mean anything more than that, because there's literally nothing else in the book for it to be referencing what it might mean.
Right.
You know, literature. Like literary writing is like presenting different concepts to you. And like when it uses biblical language, it's going, okay, what I'm talking about now reflect through like a biblical or spiritual or religious kind of thing, and think about it that way. And then it uses something else and you're like, okay, now we're thinking about something from Lord of the Rings, you know.
Yeah, or we're using symbolism to say something else.
But if what you're talking about is it's dark and he can't see. No, there is one line there, which is sort of like he took steps out into nothingness, counting them against his return. That's quite good.
Okay,
I don't know where I'm going. I can't see anything. But if I walk 10 steps in that direction, I know I'm going to count 10 steps back in this direction.
And I'm at the same point. Yeah. Good.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That tells me about what's happening inside the man's brain. But tottering in the cold, autistic dark.
What was that with the brain?
And yeah, the vestibular calculations.
The vestibular calculations.
What it means is he's thinking and trying to balance.
Yes.
Vestibular, what's that? The ear stuff, like your balance kind of stuff. But you don't, the vestibular calculations
no
in school
human,
cranked
no
out the
human is doing vestibular calculation. That is all done. Like they have no influence in that.
An old chronicle to seek out the upright. It's sort of like, yes, we have evolved over everything, but that doesn't tell us anything about like what the man wants, what the man is thinking, what he is doing, like what he's efforting. It's like going, and now let's deep dive into the part of the brain which doesn't even have to think about balance, but is thinking about balance. And you're like, and why? It's sort of like, oh yeah. And then he said to the boy, come on. And the boy followed him. And you're like, but it's not achieving anything. It's like it's the overly deep down into something writing for no reason at all.
Mm.
And anyway, you say all this about the reading experience. I didn't read it. Somebody was reading it to me. I will now go across to the audiobooks page and click on it. So this is The Road by Cormac McCarthy, narrated by Tom Stechschulter. Stechschulter. Perfectly good at narrating. I am so pleased somebody read this to me.
Okay.
Because apparently, when there's dialogue, it doesn't say who the dialogue is saying. So this is the first dialogue in the book. And I'm going to read it out as presented in the book. I ask you something. Yes, of course. Are we going to die? Sometime. Not now. And we're still going south. Yes. So we'll be warm. Yes. Okay. Okay, what? Nothing. Just okay. Go to sleep. Okay. Dialogue presented without quotation marks.
No quotation marks. Okay. Well.
No attribution. No nothing. And also, this is from a review from Chris. Again, I didn't look at the next name. It's just people that just listen to Chris. In the wake of, well, whatever cataclysmic shit happened, we've got a father and son struggling to survive in the resulting aftermath, and things aren't very promising for this enterprising duo, as whatever wiped out the inhabitants of the planet Earth also eradicated not only all plant and animal life, but in a shocking display of sheer spite, also managed to do away with quotation marks, colons, semicolons, and most hyphens. And so that's it. Like the reading experience,
was,
if you just remove
great.
All
that
punctuation.
Was a great sentence.
Like,
yeah.
There's just, if there's no, if there's no semicolons, colons, hyphens, hyphens. So if you say don't, say other people said this, like the word can't is C-A-N apostrophe T.
Yeah.
You can't do that. But if you just write it down, can't, so it's C-A-N-T, can't is also something.
Oh, are these kind of semicolons as well?
No, those apostrophes. What do you call it? Declinations. No, is that the right word? What do you call it? Anyway, when you're putting words together and you're abbreviating them and you like squish them together.
Yeah.
And you take out some letters and you replace those letters with an apostrophe.
Is also gone.
They're all gone. No, yeah. Apostrophes, hyphen. Yeah, it's all gone. And I, again, not this person didn't say it, but like all of this is terrible. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can see where this unsatisfyingness is coming from.
Let me save you the trouble of reading this one. Here's the entirety of the book. 1, it's cold. 2, it's grey outside. 3, everyone is hungry. 4, they walk and walk some more. 5, go back to 1.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay, well.
Someone else said, if you decide to read The Road, I highly recommend that you have a humorous book on hand to start reading as soon as you finish. You're going to need some humor when you're done. And that brings me back to the previous episode that we recorded, which literally I read like a humorous book that I got from an author. You know, the author.
Yeah. What
was, I should look at what the last episode was, which I didn't add to the episode list. That's
uh-oh.
So silly. Why didn't I add it to there?
Uh-oh.
So yeah, Scum of the Earth. It was the comedy book that I read.
Yep.
After this
maybe.
One.
Oh, that you read after this one.
That book, which is a dumb book about an alien invasion and what people do
Scum
2 years.
Earth.
Scum of the Earth by Alexander C. Kane.
Yeah.
Has more to say about the human condition than this book.
Okay.
Has more to say about like life in America, post-apocalyptic life, dystopia, all of the stuff that I was expecting for this book to like contain.
Mm.
I got 1,000% more out of that, out of Scum of the Earth, which is a dumb Audible original comedy, you know, alien invasion political satire.
Yeah.
Than The Road, because The Road doesn't have anything in it. It is empty of everything except the feelings that you, as a reader, bring to what you think the characters should be feeling if they're in, like, how would you be in this situation? That's all it's saying. It's sort of like, and if you're in a situation where you came across cannibals, how would you feel? And the boy goes, I'm scared. And you're like, okay, you're scared. Are you? I'm scared. Daddy, I'm scared. And he's sort of like tottering backwards and forwards in his like, I'm scared dance. And I'm just sort of like, move on. There isn't anything
Or even take the boy into your arms.
There's
like,
nothing in the book.
That's kind of like the level of humanity that I would think would happen. The father takes his son into his arms and like says something, even if the father himself doesn't believe it, to calm the boy down.
It doesn't, like, nothing in this book is good enough to think about in a way which makes you think, there's anything to think. Maybe I should have actually read some of the reviews of people who I know. Like, who's this here? Ryan Lindsay. So brilliant, so grim. Honestly, if the child character was a girl, I wouldn't be able to stand it because all I would think about was my daughter. It's bleak beyond anything you could imagine because it's rendered so vividly and realistically that it's impossible to separate yourself from it. I want to reread it, but I don't know if I can. The movie version is excellent, but it's like viewing a filter that blocks 90% of the horror. It's just a peek at what this very short novel delivers straight to your soul. So what Ryan is saying there is, I imagine myself in that situation
with
my daughter or with my son or with whatever,
yeah.
And I feel like I would find that horrific.
Right. So the reader is doing all the work.
I'm not saying it is. Like, maybe it's amazing writing to be able to, like I say, trick people, but like do whatever the trick of writing is to make people think that like the only way they consume it is always thinking about what they would do in that situation.
Yeah.
And I have zero interest of inserting myself into what I would think in any situation. Mm-hmm. I think it's the author's job to tell me about an interesting character, or at least a character in an interesting situation,
yeah,
or position or whatever,
yeah,
to tell me what they're thinking about it. And if they're not doing that, they're not doing their job properly.
Yeah.
Like, if I want some escapism stuff, I'll just ride a roller coaster. Or I'll watch a video or YouTube video of somebody else riding a roller coaster. And that's kind of escapism, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like, I can imagine, like, if I'm watching, like, say, a mountain bike video, yeah, and someone's going, like, what we were doing yesterday, someone's out in, you know, Utah, and we're riding the Red Bull Rampage course, and there's, like, yeah, a... And we were like, oh, yeah, that would be interesting to ride, because it's not quite as scary as Red Bull Rampage, because if you fall off, you're not just dead immediately, but you're still going to ride along a very narrow thing on the, yeah, down the edge of a ridge.
Yeah,
and you know, and the speed he's going, it's interesting. I'm totally fine with escapist, you know, self, like, oh, what would I feel like if I'm that in, if I was doing that?
Yes,
you know,
yes,
and that's really great for first person, you know, first person POV videos of whatever, you know.
Yeah,
escapism is fine, but in a book where everything is this grim, I felt like the author had to do more to tell me, like, oh, just do more.
Hmm.
And not do more as in write more, like, weird stuff. There's these things like this. It's snowing, the boy said, a single grey flake sifting down. He caught it in his hand and watched it expire like the last host of Christendom. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And this is what this this author here, J.G. Keeley, is talking about. He's saying, like, he's trying to bring in, like, this, like, religious language into the thing, you know, into the what's it? There stand his trees, each with a hollow trunk, as if a hermit and a crucifix were in. And I'm like, that isn't anything. You're not saying anything, because crucifixes and hermits aren't in trunks of trees in a post. Like, again, there has to be some that I don't remember reading that, but, like, there has to be something more to, like, there has to be something there which you're referencing, which you can bring in this. And this reviewer is talking about Melville in the, you know, like, and Moby Dick, which is weird, because that's another book that I'm reading at the moment. I'm listening to as an audio.
Oh, you're still going?
Yeah, I'm plodding through it. And you know what? I would love Melville to have written this. I have major issues with Melville's storytelling and characterization.
Yeah.
But fuck me, he can write about, like, the details of what it's like to spear a whale, like, really good. Like, I can picture everything there.
Yeah.
Like, everything that he's talking about in the book. I'm like, right, I get it. Yeah, I know. I honestly know what it feels like to be watching this scene, like, as an outsider. But if you say, you know, there stand his trees, each with a... Oh, no, wait a second. Or maybe that is Melville or whatever like that. So, again, I'm not sure what this is... Oh, no, that was there stand his trees, each with a hollow trunk as if a hermit and a crucifix were in. That's actually Melville. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, so you can, he's bringing out that. Like, again, I don't understand. Like, so obviously in Moby Dick, that would mean something, if you know what I mean, because all of the rest of it. But just putting that line into the road, you know, he caught a snowflake in his hand and watched it expire like the last host of Christendom, doesn't do anything there.
What is Christendom?
Christendom, like Christianity. Like, Christendom is,
why,
like,
are we not using Christianity?
Well, because Christendom is a different thing. And again, if you're reading something like Moby Dick, which is like all biblical stuff, all it's like, this is a mythical story. Again, that's one of the issues that I have with it. It's sort of like, and now we will do a 20-minute chapter, and this is the audiobook, a 20-minute chapter about Jonah and the whale. And now we will talk about this other legend and this other epic. And now here's a bit from Greece, and here's a bit from Rome, and here's a bit from Shakespeare, and here's a bit from the Bible. And, you know, it's sort of like it's creating something which wants to be epic by referencing all of these all of this other epicness.
Yeah.
And you can't do that in a 6.5-hour post-apocalyptic book where the dialogue is like, Dad, I'm cold. Are we going to die? No, you're not going to die. Well, not yet. Oh, is it warmer to the... Like, there isn't... Like, you can't... There's nothing there.
No.
Like, there's no character to latch onto to put all the epicness on top and the literary references and the religious references on top of for it to hold up its own weight. Anyway, I think I've gone on long enough about this book.
Yeah.
It's not very good.
Yeah.
But it's not just not very good. It's like actively bad.
Yes, I can.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, I've very rarely given a book 0.5 stars. But this is one of those books where I'm like, yeah, I didn't finish it. But I decided not to finish it because I thought it felt like I was being insulted. Like,
Right. Like
the author wasn't doing any work. You know, it's like the worst of that John Scalzi book where they're like, oh, yeah, that was a really fun story, said the legendary pilot. I should tell you about it sometime. And then never tells us. And you're like, no, you can't just say. Like, the space battle was a bit of a disappointment. And you're like, you can't just write that the space battle was a bit like show, like, you know, that kind of thing. Like, yeah, there
show
has
why
to...
it was a disappointment.
Well, no, don't write a space opera which promises space battles, and at the end they're like, nah, the space battle hardly mentions.
Wasn't good, so we shouldn't
like,
go into
so
it.
So you include it in the like in the last chapter, and the space battle takes up half of a sentence, like. You can't tell me we're doing space opera with you know, you can't put a spaceship on the front of a book and then the only space battle in the whole thing is one half of one sentence telling me that it was a bit of a disappointment. You're like, no, fuck you. You know what I mean? And again, that's John Scalzi writing literally one of the worst books I've ever read.
Yeah.
And this is Cormac McCarthy literally the worst post-apocalyptic book I've ever read.
You've read any other books by this author?
No. Why would I?
I don't know. Maybe.
He decided check it out. I'm going to write something post-apocalyptic. And it's sort of like, it's harder than that. You can't just be a literary genius in another place and just be like, oh, I'll try some science fiction or some post-apocalyptic or some fantasy. No, that takes work. That's a skill. That's a muscle that you have to train.
Sorry, I have to add this to this conversation because it fits. I just read an article about this astronomer guy who saw this meteorite... Whatever, that he thought, oh, there's something there. And then they went to the bottom of the sea and got something out and looked at things. Ah, this is alien. This is intergalactic, interstellar, whatever. And then lots of people wrote literal papers about what bullshit this was.
Yeah.
Like the people who actually look at stones and geology. and the how it is made and how it's going. And it's like, you can't, even if you're an expert, whatever expert in any sort of thing, and then you can't just go into another thing thinking like, oh, I'm an expert, this is going to be easy for me.
No, I don't mind it when people who don't normally do this kind of thing,
you have to put the work
take
in.
A turn at it. For example, you'd be like how about Danny Boyle? Okay, you go, right, he's done Train Spotting and then he does another movie, like some other movie, and you're like, okay, I know what he does.
But he's a director.
Yeah, but let me just say, and then he makes Sunshine and you're like, oh, that's really great. And then he makes 28 Days Later and you're like, oh shit, can you do anything? And then he directs like Slumdog Millionaire and wins an Oscar for Best Picture and stuff, and you're like, oh, some people, I don't mind them when they try out different things.
Oh, you know, it's not about trying out different genres or something,
yeah,
but it is about that this guy, the director,
yeah, Danny
is still
Boyle.
Doing storytelling,
yeah,
right?
And then he directs the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. You know?
Yeah, this kind
like,
of stuff.
Who do you get to do that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and there's some people who you go, all right, I'll trust you to do something different.
Yeah.
But like, again, I'm not saying that I don't want to read literary books. Like Ian M. Banks, he also was Ian Banks, who wrote literary novels with no science fiction, no fantasy. And you read some of them and they're like great examples of the work. But also then you read his science fiction, you're like, oh, right, he's doing something like he's doing a different job. That's why he took on like he wanted to appeal to different audiences with different things. And I don't even mind it when there's who wrote the books Oryx and Crake? What's that one here? Let me just go back to try and find that. Oryx and Crake. Oh yeah, Margaret Atwood. She always claiming, oh, I'm not a science fiction author. I write literary fiction. I'm like, yeah, but you're also writing post-apocalyptic and dystopian and, you know, there's new inventions and there's genetic engineering, stuff like that. She's obviously a science fiction writer who is trying her hardest to claim she isn't. But I read Oryx and Crake and really liked it. What did I give it? 3 stars.
Yeah.
And actually, I think the other books in that series are better because they're like a bit more science fictional.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed by her writing.
Yeah.
Again, I had issues with some of it, but at least what she's saying is interesting.
Yeah.
At least there's literally a single thing in her books that she claims isn't science fiction, which is new to me as an avid science fiction reader.
Yeah.
And all of these other ones, I'm like, you know, I was listening to this, I'm going, well, why aren't I just reading, that list of those other books, why aren't I just reading I Am Legend again? Why aren't I just reading, you know, Day of the Triffids? Why aren't I just reading, you know, The Chrysalids? Again, I'm just
Planet
out,
of the Apes.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes. Why aren't I just going with these other things, you know? Well, Planet of the Apes is different because that's like long-term post-apocalyptic, but I'm just saying it's sort of like, oh, what does it all make me feel about being the last man on Earth or whatever?
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap that up there. 0.5 stars. Again, that is a very low rating for me. Let's go over to my rating system here and click and let's see the lowest rated books I've done Connie Willis, The Doomsday Book, 0.1 stars, because that I only got a few chapters in and I knew I didn't read it. But yeah, this is down here with Ben Bover, Mars, The Last Astronaut, Kate Hope Day in The Quick, Mary Robinette Cowell, Calculating Stars, which again, I gave that such a low thing, and all of my memories of it now, like, it's improving much in my mind. Because I think I'm just forgetting how disappointed I was in that book. And I'm like, why did I give that book such a low thing? You know, Quantum Night by Robert J. Sawyer, among others by Joe Walton, Fall of Hyperion by Dan Simmons, Paul of June by Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson. That's going all the way back to episode 10. And yeah, so that's kind of the level of my enjoyment of this book. Some of those books I finished, a lot of those books I didn't finish, and all of them, the thing that they seem to have in common was, like, Luke is super disappointed. And even if he wasn't disappointed, what is there isn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I go into something expecting something, it isn't that, but if it's even remotely good at what it is being, I'll still give it 2 stars or still give it 2.5 stars and be like, oh, I wasn't what I wanted, but 2.5 stars. But it's the books which you go into it expecting one thing, not getting that, and what you actually get is just, like, a pile of shit. And in this case, literal shit. You know what I mean? Like, literally nothing alive, everything dead. And I'm not even impressed by how... I'm not even impressed by how much you want me to feel depressed.
Yeah.
I'm not even that depressed.
Yeah.
The only thing I was depressed about was how bad this book was.
I think these two things that you read out by these two reviewers, where one said step one, step two, step three, step four, and then the other guy, who condensed it down in their own words in the style of the book.
Yeah.
Got it across.
Yeah.
I don't actually need anymore.
No, you don't need to read it. I'm just saying, me reading other people's 1-stars reviews was a really good 2 hours of my life.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That was the escapism.
No, it wasn't escapism, because all of them made me think about something. All of them made me, like not just because I didn't agree with all of them. I actually had some of thoughts about them, and which was sort of like, oh no, actually I disagree with this part of this review. Mm. But like reading about it from other people's review things when they're kind of saying the same thing as me, it's sort of like, what is it? And I guess it all comes down to is you get out of this book only what you're putting into the book.
Right.
Like, you bring your own emotions to this book and you bring you're putting yourself in the situation and maybe you get enough out. But I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if I was willing to, I honestly think even if I was willing to, I'd be bored because I've read so much better science fiction and read so much better, like, near post-apocalyptic stuff.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, the stuff that I was getting annoyed about in other books where lots of people are dying, which is sort of like, oh, and now the cannibalism scene. I'm just sort of like, I'm just not interested. Like, you've got to do something really interesting. To be honest, in this book, I didn't even get to the cannibalism because as soon as cannibalism was mentioned, I'm like, nope, I'm out. Like, I just don't even need to know about it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Either way.
I think I'm not going to read this book, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a few of the reviews because I think that...
I'll send you some links.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
All right, that's it for me. Let's next do another review. We can do it straight away or we can do it later. I'm not sure, but I'm going to review The Bear. And if you've read The Bear and if you've heard about this book, you might know what's coming up.
Interesting.
I mean, not in terms of my opinion of The Bear, but also, like, they've
in the conversation.
Got a lot of stuff in common.
Okay.
So, yeah.
If you want to get in contact.
Okay, no, yeah. Email me at luke@juggler.net. And yeah, we're on Instagram.
And on Goodreads.
And on Goodreads.
And go and read the reviews of other people.
Yeah, go and check out other people's reviews.
Join the SFBRP listener group.
Yeah, and if you want to tell me anything about this, there's a thread in the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads called Episode Feedback. So just, if you want to talk about this book, just chuck it in the episode feedback thing. And I've got nothing against anyone who gave this book 5 stars. I'm just saying, I don't understand what you see in it. And if even I do understand what you're seeing in it, I think you're all wrong. This at best is a 2-star book. At best a 2-star book. No idea. Won the Pulitzer Prize.
Doesn't mean anything.
Right, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.